So, Baxter Holmes, where does the story begin?
Let's begin at the beginning of the story I wrote. It's October 30th, 2016. The Phoenix Suns are playing in their arena in downtown Phoenix against the Golden State Warriors.
Baxter Holmes covers the NBA for ESPN.
Earl Watson's young head coach for them in just his third game. Close game, but they fall to the Warriors, who go on to win the championship. After the game, as Watson tells me, Suns majority owner Robert Sarver comes into the coach's locker room. And he says, according to Watson, "You know, why does Draymond Green get to run up the court and say N-word?" And according to Watson, Sarver then says that word several more times. Watson, who is black and Hispanic, tells Sarver, who is white, "You can't say that." "Why?" Sarver tells him. "Draymond Green says N-word." "You can't expletive say that," Watson says again. Now, I should add, through his legal team, Sarver denied using racially insensitive language. Quote, "I've never called anyone or any group of people the N-word or referred to anyone or any group of people by the N-word, either verbally or in writing. I don't use that word. It is abhorrent and ugly and denigrating and against everything I believe in." But this anecdote is one of many that offers a glimpse into conduct that many sources told me is indicative of the culture of the Phoenix Suns under Sarver since he bought the team in 2004.
Last week, ESPN's Baxter Holmes released a report that stopped the NBA in its tracks. It was a year in the making, based on interviews with dozens upon dozens upon dozens of current and former employees of the Phoenix Suns, all of it adding up to a portrait of their boss, Robert Sarver, the team owner, the man who presided over a dysfunctional workplace that is allegedly rampant with racism and misogyny. Today, Baxter updates the details of his reporting, the NBA's response, and the forecast of what might happen next. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Wednesday, November 10th. This is ESPN Daily. So, Baxter, you have done an insane amount of reporting here. We're talking about over 70 current and former employees of the Phoenix Suns who have talked to you. Just at the top here, what did you learn about the culture of this organization?
Man, a lot to unpack. Very surprising. I went in initially knowing that, look, this was a team that had been at the bottom of the NBA standings for 10 years after kind of the 7 seconds or less era. And then they reached the finals this last year. But there was a lot of struggles in between, going through tons of head coaches. They were cycling through plenty of general managers. And the only things I think that were out there that I was at least aware of was what had been published with respect to Robert. Certainly you saw the turnover and basketball ops and things, but with respect to him, perception of being frugal, whether, you know, paying players or certain basketball ops folks. Beyond that, there was rumblings and different stories, and some of which we did, that focused on meddling in basketball operations. But I was very surprised, and it came through a simple question, and it was, what is it like working there? Which I'd ask current staffers, and then for the former staffers, what was it like working there? And that was when all these stories would come out and essentially described over a 17-year ownership period under Robert Sarver, talking about a culture of fear, of intimidation, retaliation, a persistence of misogyny and racism, and a toxic and sometimes hostile work environment. This particular quote kind of stuck out to me. It was from a former Suns basketball executive, but he said, "There's literally nothing you could tell me about him, Robert Sarver, from a misogynistic or race standpoint that would surprise me." And to unpack that a little bit, the notion of "there's nothing you could tell me that would surprise me," I heard that dozens and dozens and dozens of times. People would describe witnessing things, enduring things, coming to believe over a certain period of time that no matter what happened there, however far out of the norm that it seemed for them, that eventually they reached this point where as they would say to me time and again, nothing surprises me anymore.
We should note that Robert Sarver virtually denied everything that you reported. Let's use that as the basic framework upon which we're going to discuss all of this stuff. But one Suns co-owner told you, Baxter, quote, the level of misogyny and racism is beyond the pale. It's embarrassing as an owner, end quote. This is somebody who was on the ownership team with Robert Sarver. And it occurs to me here, as we get into the details, like, we know as basketball fans, as sports fans, we know about Jim Dolan with the Knicks. We know about Mark Cuban with the Mavericks. But Robert Sarver is a name that I don't think has that Q rating necessarily. So just tell me, for people who aren't familiar, who is this guy?
Well, we mentioned in the story someone who attended games as young as 8 years old. I think it's listed in his bio on the team's website. Came largely from a financial background, specifically banking, led an ownership group that bought the team for a record $401 million in 2004. And that period, there have been incremental moves that were kind of made leading up to that. But that marked the beginning of the 7 seconds or less era.
Yeah, Baxter, when you mention the 7 seconds or less era, this is the famous philosophy of Mike D'Antoni, the former head coach of the Suns, in the mid-2000s, thereabouts, and it basically revolutionized the game, right? Like, this is where the Suns are pushing the ball up the court, they're playing with pace, they're trying to get shots off in under 7 seconds every time, and it pushed basketball, as we know it, into not only this era of great success in Phoenix, but, like, into the modern era writ large.
Yeah, it was revolutionary. We're talking about Steve Nash running up and down the court, back-to-back MVPs.
Nash tries it again. Oh, Nash puts it in. Another circus shot. Steve Nash. Wow.
Amari Stoudemire.
Oh, Amari! Oh, oh, oh. In the face of Jefferson. Wow.
Sean Marion. I mean, this team was absolutely electric to watch, and the scoreboard was lighting up. There was a ton of excitement there. This was a golden age of Phoenix Suns basketball. But that's the beginning of the Robert Sarver era in Phoenix. He had a front row seat, quite literally, sitting courtside for many of those games, and was certainly very visible for it.
So he had success for some time, but it was a mixed bag on the court. But his reputation, Baxter, around the league. I mean, before you started reporting on this team, what was that? Well, how did the league view him as an owner?
Publicly, primarily, and this came out in stories dating back to even during that glorious 7 seconds or less era, and certainly has persisted, but just about being frugal. You know, some viewed him as cheap because of avoiding the luxury tax or refusing to pay people a certain amount. So there was plenty of turnover on the basketball operations side, and that would continue, whether it's coaches, GMs, plenty of press releases coming from the Suns about moves. And then there was also this perception, which kind of came, I would say, during the decade from like 2010 to this past year, of being involved in basketball operations in times and in ways that may have hindered their ability to compete. The word that was often thrown around was meddling, but those were the two kind of primary things that he was known for.
What would you say was the earliest sign of the behavior that wound up being deemed as questionable?
Soon after he becomes majority owner of the team, he's in a free agent meeting, I'm told, to acquire Steve Nash, who is obviously going to be the floor general that will carry them through the 7 seconds or less era. It's going to be a game-changing acquisition for the team. Recruiting pitch is set there. In the room, I'm told, attendees include Steve Nash's agent, Bill Duffy, and 2003 Rookie of the Year, Amari Stoudemire, both of whom are Black. Three people who were in the room separately told me he made a remark, Sarver, that they felt was racially insensitive. Now, they couldn't recall the specifics, but they said that they felt he too loosely used the term Black guy in kind of an off-color remark during the conversation. Now, ultimately, the Suns got Steve Nash. They acquired their top target. But as somebody who was in the room told me, we signed Steve Nash despite Robert.
So signing Steve Nash despite their owner. I mean, were there other instances, Baxter, where Suns employees felt that Sarver was racially insensitive?
A common refrain, and this kind of touches back on the Earl Watson quote, was, and at least a half dozen Suns staffers recounted this to me, independent of each other, but of him hearing a story from a black player and then retelling it and using the same language down to the usage of the N-word. And one former executive told me of hearing this and wanting to say, whoa, you know, Robert, you can't do that. A former head coach of the Phoenix Suns told me that such instances were commonplace. A black basketball operations staffer told me that he heard him use it multiple times. A separate one that is not necessarily in that vein, though, a high-level executive overheard him using the N-word when trying to explain why he preferred hiring Lindsey Hunter over Dan Majerle as the team's head coach in 2013. So at the time, Hunter, first-year Suns player development coordinator, Dan Majerle, very well-known player, obviously, was in his fifth year as a Suns associate head coach. But according to the high-level executive who overheard Robert say it, the line was, quote, these N-words need an N-word.
So then it's 2016, a couple years later, and there's this incident involving Draymond and the N-word that you told us about at the top of the show. And Earl Watson, the Suns coach, who is black and Hispanic, he pushed back against Sarver at that point. But I also understand that there were more incidents involving Earl Watson and Robert Sarver throughout Watson's tenure. What exactly happened?
In his first year leading the bench in Phoenix, there was a conversation between Robert and Earl. And in Earl's retelling, Robert asked him, how can the team improve? And Earl said he replied that the organization suffered from a lack of diversity. And according to Earl, Robert's reply was, I don't like diversity. And according to Earl, Robert then said that having a diverse staff makes it harder for people to agree. But I will take a step back and say that a lack of diversity amongst the organization's highest ranks was an issue that a number of employees told me that they voiced to their superiors, including to Robert. And as one current business employee said, everybody knows that our diversity here is sh-.
And then there's this other thing that happened, Baxter, this time in 2017, and it involved then Suns guard Eric Bledsoe, who was represented at the time by Clutch Sports, which happened to be the agency that also represented then coach Earl Watson.
Yes. So Bledsoe is up for free agency, point guard, and there's contract talks eventually between Rich Paul, the head of Clutch Sports, obviously, and with Robert Sarver. And there's friction in the negotiations. But to fast forward a little bit, we're told that Paul eventually responds to Robert's remarks by saying that he knew basketball and that they weren't talking about tennis, which was Robert's childhood sport. We're then told that Robert erupted at this dig, according to a couple of people privy to the conversation. And he then told Paul that he was going to fire Watson as the team's head coach if Earl didn't sever ties with Clutch within 10 days. So this is essentially an ultimatum that is leveled down, and it comes to Earl, and he reached out to Robert to see if he was serious. And Robert said to him, according to Earl, yeah, I will fire you. You have 10 days to think about it. Don't wait too long. And Watson told me that he explained to Robert the optics of having a white owner asking a black coach to sever ties with an agency led by a black agent in Rich Paul. And Sarver replied, according to Watson, yeah, I understand what race you two are. So I'm asking you, how bad do you want your job? And Earl told me that he told Robert that he wasn't going to cut ties with Clutch. Quote, you can do whatever you want. You own this team, but my culture is not for sale and I'm not for sale.
So from there, Baxter, this relationship between Earl Watson and Robert Sarver, how does it go? How does it escalate even more than that?
Well, Earl recalled one of his final interactions with Robert, and he says that in that interaction, he was trying to explain to him how he believed that Robert's outburst negatively affected every aspect of the franchise, from players' performance on the court, the coach's ability to do their jobs on the bench, front office ability to make sound basketball decisions, to even the way the Suns were officiated. As Earl recalled saying, the only common denominator is you. This cemetery runs deep of coaches, GM, players. You're the only common thread. It's you. And Watson told me that he told Sarver that he was toxic and that the Suns were toxic because of him. Robert, according to Earl, screamed back, you're toxic.
All right, after the break, former female staffers who work for Robert Sarver speak out.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So, Baxter, the racial insensitivity, all of that stuff is its own bucket, but what you've reported here is also very much about misogyny and about Robert Sarver's alleged words and actions. Again, the stuff that he denies, but what did Suns employees tell you about Robert Sarver's behavior along those lines?
One of the things that they touched on a lot was his behavior specifically in meetings or staff meetings. We talked about him passing around a picture of his wife in a Suns bikini in a meeting and people feeling uncomfortable. I think the phrase we used in the story was passing around like a hot potato, you know, describing him as he would stand in front of people and talk about his wife performing oral sex on him. There are instances, we have four former employees describing all staff meetings where Robert would talk about how he needed to wear Magnum or extra large condoms. We have former employees saying that they overheard him asking players about their sex lives and the sexual prowess of their significant others.
Baxter, I mean, that is a lot on its own, but I also, you know, I think of the women who worked for him directly. What did they tell you about that?
One particular quote stuck out to me, and it was certainly echoed by plenty, but the quote was, "Women have very little value." And this is from a former female staffer who I asked her, how would you describe how you felt working there? And she said, "Women are possessions, and I think we're nowhere close to where he thinks men are." And there's different anecdotes that people touched on as being kind of indicative and in this same vein. So before the 08-09 season, there was a pregnant Suns employee who was going to be helping coordinate the 2009 NBA All-Star game in Phoenix and was told by Sarver, I'm told, by two different employees, that she wasn't going to be able to continue in that role because of her state. And the two employees had Sarver explained that, you know, she would be breastfeeding and that she needed to be home with her newborn. One of the employees familiar with the remarks replied to me and said, you know, this is so out of line, so inappropriate. Another instance, March 2011, Robert berating the same female former employee over a tribute video that was to then honor former Suns executive Rick Welts. And his issue, according to two employees told me, was that he wasn't featured more prominently in the video and that instead it featured more of former Suns owner Jerry Colangelo, who actually had hired Rick. And in the meeting, I was told that at one point, the woman broke down in tears, to which Robert said, "Why do all you women here cry so much?" A female former marketing employee told me that Sarver would frequently use such language as, "Do I own you? Are you one of mine?" The employee added, "He makes you feel like you belong to him." And that was in the same vein that others had said throughout my reporting process. They would recall instances of hearing Sarver refer to both staffers and players as inventory.
The quote, Baxter, "Why do all you women around here cry so much?" I mean, your reporting does do a very effective job of explaining why that may have been the case. And part of your reporting also extends to players, you know, who Sarver would talk to about women as well.
Yeah, so there's a couple instances that stick out for me here. So one is during the 2012-13 season, Sarver's addressing players before they head to LA for a game. Now, the team had played poorly there, and there were rumblings that players were enjoying the nightlife a little too much. It happens in LA, happens in some other cities. But in addressing the players, I was told that Robert offered to fly women to Los Angeles, the implication there obviously being sexual, if the players promised to be in bed at a reasonable hour before the next day's game. So the play, you know, this gesture wasn't necessarily taken seriously. Someone who was there told me, but standing within earshot was a female staffer who was mortified. And I was told from one staffer, you know, Robert was goofing around, but little did he know, standing out in the hallway is one of our women staff members who cares for the family members, ultimately, of players and coaches. Another instance, and I'd be honest with you, this one kind of made my eyebrows go up a little bit. So the team is recruiting LaMarcus Aldridge. He's a free agent. They learn at some point during the recruitment that he's got kids in Texas and playing closer to them, obviously he ultimately goes to the San Antonio Spurs, but that playing closer to family was appealing. And I'm told that Robert remarks at one point to basketball operations staffers, what we need to do, you know, essentially is we need strippers in the Phoenix area to become impregnated by NBA players. So they'll have kids here. And then when they hit free agency, they'll feel more obligated to play here because they'll be closer to family.
I mean, that quote, I mean, I get there's an attempt at humor there, presumably, but it's an insane thing to say objectively to anyone, let alone people that, you know, work for you.
Yes. And there's certainly plenty of things where you're wanting to get a sense of like, okay, how serious was he here? Did he really mean it? Whatever. And I remember asking a former basketball operations staffer, like, about the nature of some of these comments. And the staffer told me, quote, a lot of the stuff he says is to get a big reaction. And who's going to tell him that he can't? The quote continues, he speaks in threats. He likes that awkwardness. He likes people to know that he's in charge. He wants control. He wants control of every situation and every person.
So a boss like that who says all of these things reportedly and does all of these things reportedly, again, he denies virtually all of it, but a boss like that, how does the culture of the organization in like a practical way, you know, how does that get shaped? How does it filter down to it?
So we have multiple current and former employees telling us about conduct by other members of the Suns leadership team that they felt contributed to a toxic and sometimes hostile work environment. Now, none said that Robert was involved in those incidents, but many felt that his own conduct contributed to a culture that affected how some other managers within the org treated their employees. And there's different kind of touchstone stories that people would tell at different points in time that they felt really represented aspects of that culture, behavior from some senior level managers that they felt were enabled by Robert, so to speak. One particular story focused on a female employee who said that she was physically assaulted by a male coworker outside of the office, right? So after that, colleague of hers goes into HR out of concern for the employee's safety. And we're essentially told that HR's response to potentially resolve this issue is to move this employee's desk, the female who was assaulted by a coworker, allegedly assaulted by a coworker, further away from that coworker. But, you know, it's still, I think, about, you know, roughly less than 10 feet away. It's from being right beside him to about 10 feet away. As she said, I couldn't escape. And her response to HR's potential resolution to this issue was, it was a joke. It was an absolute joke. So, you know, we have current and former employees saying women often didn't feel valued, you know, a sentiment that led to a ton of departures. The turnover was really striking. You go through the media guides. I know that we focus on maybe the churn through so many head coaches or GMs, but really noticing it throughout the entire organization, it was, again, the word is striking. But with women, this was a topic that came up a lot, the turnover amongst women in the organization. And I remember, so there was a former female employee who kind of described feeling like she, when she left, she was abandoning the younger female staffers who were there, and that she was actually happy when she learned not long afterwards that a lot of them were gone. I remember a former female employee telling me of the culture, it breaks you. I'm hard to break and it broke me. And then another telling me, it wrecked my life. I was contemplating suicide.
So the HR department, Baxter, which again is the place where employees should go if they feel that something is not okay at work. Along any of the sort of lines that you've now exhaustively reported for us, what was that? What was that functionally then?
This was something that came up so many by so many staffers throughout the 17 years. I think virtually almost every single person I talked to in some ways would bring this up because they'd say that there was no course of action. Like if I went to HR, they would feel afraid that there would be retaliation. And I remember talking to HR staffers who told me that they would privately pull people aside outside the organization or go on walks where people couldn't be seen because they'd say, you can't be seen in here. And they'd say, look, we can't really do anything for you. Your best course of action is to sue the organization. And it was really striking to me because, you know, again, we talk about a culture of fear, culture of retaliation, but there being no real avenue for people to, A, feel like they could safely voice concerns or complaints or what have you without repercussions that could potentially end their careers or anything of that nature, but just feeling like nothing could be done. And HR was tied into the center of that. People said time and again, you know, the first rule was no matter what you're going through, don't go to HR.
You said that literally the HR representatives would say, we need to physically exit the building in order to discuss something that is allegedly gravely wrong about what's happening inside the building.
Yeah, and I remember one HR staffer telling me that they felt complicit in some ways because they couldn't try to help resolve issues that people were going through, right? Because some of the issues and complaints that people wanted to bring were far above them. They maybe had to do with Robert, or they had to do with certain senior level executives. And even being seen in the HR office, as one HR staffer told me, it was like it would put a target on an employee's back. So, you know, maybe in another workplace, HR is the place you go to hopefully safely and comfortably and confidentially bring forward issues and have them resolved. And numerous staffers throughout the entire time there, and HR staffers acknowledge this too, that it just didn't, I don't want to say it didn't happen there, but it was a place where people did not feel comfortable talking about it. And even certain HR staffers would dissuade people from even coming into the office to do so.
Okay, coming up, how the NBA league office reacted to all of this.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So your story was published last week, Baxter. Did you reach out to Robert Sarver about these allegations? What did he have to say?
We did. We asked the Suns on multiple occasions to interview Robert about his tenure at Phoenix. We also sent Robert and the Suns organization written questions regarding allegations. Their responses largely, and I look, this is a very long story. There's a lot of stuff in it, but largely denials about or saying that certain anecdotes are mischaracterized the way that we phrase them. One particular statement I would note that came from Robert and the Suns, this is from Robert. Let me be crystal clear. I never once suggested on that night or ever that I should be able to say the N-word because a player or a black person uses it. Now, that obviously is addressing the anecdote at the very top of the story pertaining to Earl Watson, Draymond Green, that incident after the game. But yes, largely, I mean, I think outside of an anecdote pertaining to a male employee being pantsed during the 2014 ALS Ice Bucket Challenge by Robert Sarver, largely everything else, again, denials or saying it's mischaracterizations.
I'm curious, did any people of note speak out in favor of Robert Sarver?
Yeah, in the days since, and certainly during our reporting, look, we have Monty Williams, the head coach of the team, and star player Devin Booker said they haven't experienced anything like that in their time at Phoenix. I also noted Booker, I think, was asked after a recent game if he thought that Earl Watson was credible. And he said, yeah, that's my guy. I'm paraphrasing. So I would also note that. We also spoke to Steve Kerr. Now, Steve worked in Phoenix under Robert. He was a GM there, I think, from 2007 to 2010. He obviously hasn't worked at the team at any point since then. He's been in Golden State, and as we now know, as their head coach. But of the time that they worked together from 04 to 2010, Steve said, quote, I never saw anything that suggested racism or misogyny, and I was very surprised to hear those allegations because that's not the person I know. And I would say that that particular phrase is, you know, in various statements that have come out, that's the heart of it. That's the essence of what various people have said.
So how does the league office, how does the NBA itself, Baxter, how do they process your reporting? What do they plan to do about it?
In my reporting, I remember one staffer, current staffer, tell me that, and I'm paraphrasing here, you know, if the league and the commissioner were to come in and investigate to see what is going on in Phoenix, he, Adam Silver, would be appalled. And that was kind of echoed by people who have wondered for years why maybe there hasn't been an investigation. They've seen other ones happen around the league. But hours after our story was published, the NBA announced that they're going to be launching an investigation. They're going to be hiring a law firm out of New York to conduct it. This is the same firm that investigated former Clippers owner Donald Sterling in 2014. And I would also note that, and this was in a news story I wrote with our colleague Woj, that there's a groundswell of support, I would say, in the organization amongst the rank and file about this investigation being launched. The Suns have said in statements that they plan to fully cooperate, that they're eager for this investigation to happen. But in talking to current staffers, some have said that, you know, they felt like they've waited for this. They've wanted something like this. One told me that, you know, a lot of us view this as our moment to right this ship. So many, some of them are eager to share stories about things they've witnessed, things they've endured. But beyond that, they also expressed to me in talking to multiple staffers, this feeling that kind of a fear of potential retaliation from Suns leadership. So some of them have questions about how confidential is the information we share? How is that going to be? Our identities, things of that nature. So those are very much real, but the investigation is off and running. I don't know how long it'll take, but there'll certainly be a lot of eyes on it.
So that high-powered law firm that you just referenced, Baxter, Wachtell Lipton, they were the firm that looked into Donald Sterling. Donald Sterling, of course, is the case study that everybody basically turned to as soon as your story came out, because Sterling, of course, is caught on tape using a racial slur, gets fined $2.5 million, ends up being forced to sell the team after his players revolt, after this whole thing goes viral around the world. But I also think of what happened in 2018. Because that's when the Dallas Mavericks are investigated for reports of a hostile working environment, with reports ranging from sexual harassment to domestic violence, and Mark Cuban does not lose his team. Cuban, the team's owner, is sanctioned by the NBA. He donates $10 million to women's leadership and domestic violence organizations, but the team is still very much his. So if the NBA confirms your reporting through their investigation, what sort of repercussions do you think Robert Sarver and the Suns will face?
It's a great question. I've certainly been asked this plenty, even throughout my reporting, I would say. People, staffers have said, if the NBA comes and investigates, what do you think is going to happen? And I wish I had a great answer for you there. Obviously, in my story, there's a whole range of different issues that are touched on. And I don't know what they'll find. I don't know necessarily how many people Wachtell Lipton is committing to this. I don't know necessarily, you know, how long there'll be boots on the ground. I do know that there are people who I haven't spoken to who I've been made aware are eager to talk, but I don't necessarily know what they have and what they'll say. So I'll be very interested. But I spent a year working on this and was very surprised to hear the overall range of stories and allegations from people who worked across a 17-year period in departments all throughout the organization. It was really striking. Again, you know, 17 years is a long span of time. I don't know the nature of how far back they'll go or how many former staffers or current staffers they'll speak to, but I'm very interested in all of that.
But it sounds, Baxter, that like as the NBA pursues its investigation, you're still very much investigating still too.
I am. I have had plenty of people reach out to me who I would say I didn't talk to during the reporting process. I'm keeping in touch with others on a regular basis. While we've been recording this pod, several of them have been messaging me. So it's the second we get off here. I'm going to get back to that and hear what they had to tell me. But yeah, my phone has basically been shaking ever since the story has been published. I am subsisting off coffee and adrenaline. I'm glad you can't see me because there's a lot of luggage underneath my eyes. But yeah, I'm along for it, wherever this goes.
Baxter Holmes, thank you for your reporting, and I look forward to hearing what you find out next.
Thanks, man. It's good to be with you.
One quick postscript. After we recorded, Baxter Holmes filed an additional report stating that Robert Sarver's wife, Penny Sarver, texted or sent direct messages to three former Suns employees in the days around the publication of ESPN's initial Suns investigation. The ex-employees considered these messages an attempt by Penny Sarver to intimidate them, an allegation she denies, saying, quote, "Over the weekend, I decided on my own to reach out to a few people to try to set the record straight and to share how disappointed and hurt I am by the lies that are circulating about my husband and the Suns organization. Any suggestion that I tried to intimidate anyone is as silly as it is wrong and outrageous." I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.